What is good, NBA fans? Welcome into another week of Dropping Dimes. We are five games in to the NBA Finals with possibly two left. The Warriors currently sit with the lead. They're up 3-2. Just a little statistical nugget for you. Whoever wins game five wins the series 82% of the time. So the Warriors have the momentum, but they are going back to Boston for the next game, for game six. And first off, thanks to everybody that's already joining in the chat. Jeremy Bowers, Tamor Khan, Yuri McGarley. Gentlemen, how are we? I'm sure there'll be more joining us in the near term. But so last game, everything was trending for Boston to win that. And I think ultimately there were a couple keys that really hurt them and favored the Warriors, but the biggest being turnovers. When the Celtics turn the ball over 16-plus times, they just lose the game. Statistically speaking, their record is abysmal. And when they can keep it under 16 turnovers, so 15 and under, they're pretty unbeatable, which is somewhat a no-brainer. Now, on the flip side of that, Golden State, who's really turnover-prone, did not turn the ball over much at all in the last game. But the turnovers, because then points off of turnovers, Golden State is getting out and running and just making Boston pay in those instances, because Boston shot twice as many free throws as Golden State. Now, they missed 10, and they end up losing by 10. Not to say that anybody's going to be perfect from the line, but had they hit a few more of those, still, though, they took 31 free throws to Golden State's, I believe, 15. So they had a tremendous advantage in the free throw department. And I know that a lot of Boston fans were saying the ref situation wasn't fair just because of the Marcus Smart foul after the technical he got when Jordan Poole basically out Marcus Smarted Marcus Smart. He did exactly what Marcus does, and Marcus is the first to admit, hey, you know, I do those things to try and game the system. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like when Klay made a three from the top left of the arc, and he gave a slight little shiver, forearm shiver, to Marcus to create a little bit of space, and Marcus oversold it and flopped and then slid like 5 feet, and you can see the baseline ref just watch him slide, going, there's no way he pushed you that hard. I'm not giving you the call on this. And Klay buries the wide open three. So it sometimes it works in Marcus's favor, and other times it does not. But the free throw situation benefited them. They really just got killed on turnovers. Because the Warriors, I mean, on paper before the game started, if you just said all these guys are going to be abysmal from three, and they had four guys just terrible from three, Curry being one of them, went 0 for 9. You'd be like, oh my God, the Celtics crushed them by 20. Or will crush them by 20. And that just wasn't the case. And I know, so it's come up in the chat, like Jeremy Bowers saying, can we talk about how good Wiggins has been? Wiggins has been excellent. Just excellent. Taking advantage of what the defense is giving them. But I think a lot of that, or some of that credit, needs to go to Curry because of the gravity that Curry is drawing. Now, in game four, the Celtics were determined to do a drop coverage on pick and roll action. So what that means is the Warriors were getting a pick with whoever the big man was to get Al Horford or Robert Williams into defensive coverage onto Steph Curry. And those guys in game four were sagging back off of him, dropped down, hence the drop coverage. And they're 3 to 5 or 6 feet back from him, trying to stop him on that pick and the roll part of that, because they don't want to give up points in the paint, because whoever wins points in the paint in this series is winning the game. The winner of points in the paint is currently 5-0 in this series. So they were dropping back and leaving Curry wide open. And after the game, people asked Udoka, are you going to switch that up? Are you going to change things? And basically said the game plan is the game plan and we like it and we're going to stick to it. And they pretty much did. Now they did. They added a few other wrinkles. There were drop coverages. They also doubled and just straight up switched man to man and then hedged. And Curry wasn't hitting his shots as much, but another new little wrinkle they were doing is basically whoever's man has Curry, they're just going to shade to him. They're going to turn their back on the offense, and they are only going to focus solely on what Curry is doing, which sounds good on paper. Just take him out of the play, force the rest of the team to get buckets. But that defense relies on help defenders. They switch pretty much everything, which is their greatest strength, but they do rely on guys shading in to collapse down on the defense to stop, you know, interior points, easy buckets, stuff like that. And at various times, Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown, or possibly Tatum, but I specifically remember Marcus and Jaylen just off, like, Marcus was on Curry, and Curry saw that Marcus was not going to be invested in the play whatsoever. So Curry just sat up near half court, and it pulls Marcus completely out of that. And now you're running 4-on-4 in an even more wide open half court set. And the Warriors can still get into a lot of what they love to do with the line at the top there, like their split actions. Or possibly like a Spain pick and roll, or I don't recall them running elevator, but they can still get into a lot of things that they love to do, you know, pin downs and flare screens and everything else to free up guys to get shots. But to pull that defender away at times and force the defense to just go straight 4-on-4, the Warriors were making them pay for that. And that is the gravity of Steph. And there were other times where they put him into a pick and roll and they were over hedging onto Steph, and Steph found the roll man, got Draymond a couple times into that short roll action, which is where he's so deadly. He gets the ball as he's rolling and he's just below the free throw line. And now the defense collapses on him and he's either kicking out to a wide open three or someone cutting on the baseline. But that is all due to the gravity of Steph. And Wiggins is the beneficiary of that. Somebody needs to be. If they didn't have a Wiggins, then your next up would probably be Jordan Poole, but he doesn't attack at the rim as consistently or effectively as Wiggins does. So Wiggins is getting that, and then because the defenders are hedging so strongly over to Steph, or they're slightly out of rotation because they're just trying to get back fighting over screens to maintain their defensive positioning, Wiggins is then free to barrel to the rim, which he did a couple times. That one, the switched hand left-handed dunk, pretty sure was because of the gravity of Steph pulling an extra defender, and then suddenly he had that slight lane, and he goes barreling in. Or that curl dunk where he came around the right and he had Derek White on his hip, but that was from a pick and roll action. But Wiggins is making him pay. I mean, by and large, he took a couple like long mid-range, but pretty much everything else was he's either shooting a three or he's trying to get as close to the basket as he possibly can. And even on his misses, he had one where he missed point blank and then got a put back and missed that. But everybody was scrambling around so hard, the ball eventually gets repossessed by Golden State, goes to Draymond. Boston's defense is still trying to reset and scramble around, and Wiggins is still underneath the rim, and Draymond kicks it back to Wiggins, and he gets an easy lay-in. Took three shots to get that 2 points, but it was somewhat demoralizing for the Celtics. It was in the first quarter, I believe, and helped run up that early score. But once again, this is predicated upon the gravitational force that is Steph Curry. And I hope I can't imagine this time around the voters for Finals MVP will lose sight of that if the Warriors manage to win this. Because even when he has an off night like that, last night, where he went 0 of 9 for 3, it's the first time in the playoffs he's ever not made a three-point shot, he was still arguably close to the most lethal threat on offense out there at all times. The Celtics had to pay attention and honor wherever he was, even if he's having an off night, because it's Steph Curry. Like, one of my favorite little asides, you can find various clips of coaches when they're mic'd up for games. And there's several with Kerr, just because they've had so many playoff runs and the Warriors are a team that draws a lot of eyes. And there's one where I believe it's a post win, and Kerr puts his arm around Curry and they're walking towards the tunnel. And Kerr's like, "You know what I love about you, Steph? Is you could be 2 for 11. And then you get a semi-open 35-footer and you take it and you make it." And part of that is, boy, that's a bad shot for anybody not named Steph Curry. It's like, have you ever seen Kerr's reaction to, it was one of the early like wow moments from Steph after Kerr had taken over, and they're playing the Clippers, and it's at the top of the key, very top. And Curry gets the ball and he's dribbling around, and there are three or four defenders all trying to get the ball. And he eventually runs back out to the top of the key with his back to the basket, immediately pivots 180 degrees and throws up a shot, and it goes in. And then they have a shot of the sideline with Kerr with his hands up and this furrowed brow of like, "What are you doing?" Then it goes in. He's like, "Okay. All right." Like, that was wildly impressive. And you can see the crowd behind him as he's going, this look of almost disgust of like, what is this offensive set? To the crowd erupts behind him, and he just kind of smiles and just, "Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? That guy's that good." But that's the kind of gravity you have to respect him. Even when he's having an off night, he's still Steph Curry. And so last night, you have to look at how the defense is designed to take him out of everything. We don't want Steph beating us, and we're going to do everything that we can. It's really impressive, especially, what is he, 34 years old at this point? And this is statistically his best playoffs yet. That's crazy. Now, somebody with his skill set, it's not outlandish that potentially he could exhibit, you know, better traits because he's a shooter. But usually 34 is not when you're putting up your best playoffs yet. So on the flip side of that, for the Celtics, you know, the third quarter, they finally take it to the Warriors in a third, and then it fell apart in the fourth. But that's got to be, you know, a positive sign in the third quarter. I'm curious about these late game situations where they've fallen apart, because during the regular season, their crunch time statistics, it was kind of hard to get a sense of what they really were, because they put so many games away that their best players weren't playing in crunch time because there was no crunch time. They had just won the game and they're sitting those guys. So in these high leverage moments, I guess you could make a case that because they didn't get it through the course of the regular season as much as other teams did, perhaps they're not as conditioned for it. I think a bigger factor would be the amount of minutes that their biggest guys are playing. So through the playoffs so far, Jason Tatum has played the most minutes by a mile of everybody that's played. He's at 943 minutes. Number two, then, is Jaylen Brown at 876. So Tatum has 67 more minutes, over a game and a half more playing time than Jaylen Brown. Number three, then, is Al Horford at 776 minutes. And then four and five are Clay and Steph. Six is Wiggins. And then we get seven at Smart. And Smart missed of, you know, some time because of injury. But from one at Tatum to Clay at four has literally played four games more worth of minutes. He's played 192 more minutes than Clay. And the fact of the matter is, the Celtics have only played a couple games more overall, just because the Warriors managed to close out their series faster than the Celtics did previously. Up until this point, the Celtics have played 23 games and the Warriors have played 21. So there's two games difference. So in that extra two games, Tatum has played two more games on top of that. Now, he's a young guy, but how can you not be gassed at this point? I mean, he's just the load that he has to play is tremendous. That was one of the factors of why I liked the Warriors over the Celtics, is just the depth issue for the Celtics. Once they get into that bench, there's only two guys really that I'd want to be playing any kind of heavy, about three guys, I guess. Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and Grant Williams. But Grant Williams has not been effective in the series, just because Grant Williams is great when they have an elite wing in a Giannis, in Kevin Durant, in like an individual like that, where we need somebody with his size and athleticism to be able to stop an elite guy. Don't really need it as much. So you're relying on Derek White and Peyton Pritchard. And Derek White has looked a little gun shy in the past couple of games. And technically, by the numbers, the two best Celtics have been Robert Williams and Peyton Pritchard, although Pritchard has a short leash for Udoka. So the Celtics have to rely on Tatum, Brown, Smart to play tremendously heavy minutes. And then they'll get a bit of, they have to figure out some rest situations for Grant Williams and for Al Horford, just because, or not Grant Williams, I'm sorry, Robert Williams, because of his knee situation. You can't just run him into the ground, because if he really hurts his knee again, you're already thin, especially at the center position. And you take him out, and now you're playing Tice a lot of minutes, and Tice is just going to get cooked, and you can't do it. And then you couple Tatum's minutes with right now, Tatum is the all-time leader in the playoffs, in a playoffs, like a singular playoffs run for turnovers. I believe in the last game, he overtook and became number one. So whatever he gets in the next game is just going to pad that unfortunate stat. But I yes, he's turning the ball over, but I'd also say he's also playing a crazy number of minutes and with the ball in his hands a lot. And the thing is, even in all those minutes, he does have a lot of turnovers. Tatum is doing a lot of things right. Now, his shot, unless he's shooting from three, which he's shooting damn near 48% from three, unless he's shooting from three, his shot elsewhere has been mediocre. And he should probably try getting to the lane a little bit more than he is right now. But he also is leading the finals in free throw attempts. But he's shooting almost 66% from the free throw line. I mean, those, when he went 0 for 2 at that one pivotal point when they were inching their way back into the game, that seemed to be just a huge moment. They needed at least one of those, but to miss both was so demoralizing, it felt like, for the team. It kind of seemed as though, if I were a Celtics fan, it's like, oh God, we're getting close, but all the small little things aren't going the way we need them to. Like they rattled off in the third quarter where, what was it? Was it 7 or 8 straight threes? They made them all. And they just turned unconscious from three and everybody was hitting them. I mean, they got all involved. It was Smart, Horford, Tatum, Brown, like everybody was making from three. And climbed them back into the game when it looked like the Warriors are about to just blow the lid off of this. Taymor, thank you, was 8 straight. And they were inching back in, but like those two missed free throws and then the Smart technical into, they got the ball back, but then the not foul on Jordan Poole. Although I will agree with Celtics fans later in the game, Draymond walked into their huddle. I have no idea why he didn't get a technical for that. Watching it just play out in real time, it's like, what in the world is going on? Nobody was pushing or shoving. It just kept walking. Perhaps that's why all sides kept their composure and didn't actually say anything. But to watch this unfold, it's like, what is going on here? Why is this happening? And then find out that it was Draymond basically playing more mind games and just saying, I want the ball back. It's no longer yours. Like trying to get it back from Tatum. Tatum takes it to the bench and sits down with it. Just the pettiness is so great. It's so great from both sides. But I don't know how Draymond doesn't get a technical for instigating. It doesn't make sense. I'm all for you've earned the right type of situations, but that isn't one of them. You just haven't. Oh, by the way, earn the right. My favorite is, it was last game and Grant Williams is in and he got called for a foul and he turns to the bench. He's like, review. And in my head, I'm like, do you really think they're going to use the review to save a foul on you? Of all the players right now, if this were previous series where you were a huge, like, pivotal piece out there and they needed you, like in the Milwaukee series, in that closeout game where he just played the best game potentially of these playoffs. It's like, if that was late in that and it was, you know, you were on the verge of getting 5 or possibly fouling out, totally, I agree with you. Let's review that, maybe. It's like when Draymond demanded the review last night. I agree with him. He didn't foul him, But I also don't think there was enough to overturn the call. So when they upheld it and be like, meh, it's one of those, you could say that he bumped him type of situation. The foul's already been called. I don't really see them reversing this. Also, you've acted like kind of a child at certain moments in this game. So perhaps it's a penalty for those actions. But to see Draymond stomp up and down, well, he's built up the equity with his coach and his teammates to exhibit that type of behavior. And they're all like, you know what? I think Kerr was like, it's going to save an argument later. And even if we lose this game, we'll have a better chance winning overall if we can keep a harmonious unit with Draymond not rocking the boat. So I'll go ahead and challenge this. But to watch Grant Williams be like, no, challenge, and I just started laughing. It's like, no chance, man. No chance. You are wasting your time. And part of that is it's a natural reaction for a player to alert to the refs. In no way was that a foul. Instead of confronting them or staring them down or going over and pleading your case, just doing the hand twirl lets them know, in my opinion, there's no way. I am so confident I didn't foul them. I think we should use our coach's challenge right here. But it still made me laugh. But for the Celtics, you know, they still had bright spots. In that third quarter, the offense looked really good. They were getting into the defense, making the Warriors commit, collapse down to protect the paint, and then kicking out to a wide open Marcus Smart and a wide open Jason Tatum and a wide open Al Horford for those threes. So I think a little bit more of the ball movement would be a good thing, but you have to give quite a bit of credit to Golden State, because where Wiggins has really excelled for me is on the defensive end. Like that travel that he got on Tatum, where it was, I think it was him and Draymond, but Wiggins, Tatum was going up for a layup on, was that a fast break? Might have been, or somewhat close to that. But Tatum was coming to the lane and Wiggins was on him, and he jumped just a tad earlier than Tatum. And Tatum then pulled the ball down from his up motion to go for the layup, and he traveled straight up. And of course, Tatum never commits a foul or a turnover. Every time he turns to the ref and raises his hands and be like, look, man, some of these are fouls, or there's times where he throws the ball away and it's just a straight up turnover. And he pleading his case with the refs, and you see a replay and be like, there was no foul. You just threw that ball into the stands. But that early jump from Wiggins caused the hesitation in Tatum, thereby forcing the turnover. But Wiggins was just a stout defender numerous times. It's really impressive to watch. You know, when he was coming into the league, that was one of his best traits, according to DraftKings, was if nothing else, he'll be an elite defender. And there was talk of, well, if the Cavs keep him and they've got Jordan, could he be the Pippen? Pardon me. And they've got LeBron. Could he be the Pippen to LeBron's Jordan? And then he goes to Minnesota and, you know, you don't get as much of the spotlight and you're not in these moments. So you don't really see this type of ability from him night in, night out. And now to watch him against Tatum and against Brown, but mainly against Tatum, it's really impressive. His footwork is crisp and he is staying in front of him, where in a regular season, some of this is getting called for a foul. But because it's the finals, it's like you gotta go further than this. Like there are points where Tatum will do like a slight like 90 degree pivot, and suddenly Wiggins' arm will be caught underneath, like in the crook of his elbow or something, but he immediately pulls it out. In the regular season, you might get called for a foul on that. Just your hands are in the wrong place. But in the finals, it's just like you didn't affect a potential shot. And, you know, you got to earn this. This is for a championship. We're not going to give you every ticky-tack foul. Plus, the Celtics shot 31 fouls last night. I don't know how many more calls could have gone their way. Hell, I can remember at least twice the Celtics got into the bonus with 7 minutes and change left. So we hadn't even officially gotten to the halfway mark of a quarter, and they were in the bonus already. But they got to the bonus early in all four quarters, if memory serves. And weren't able to fully take advantage of that, even though they shot twice as many free throws. It could have been 50 had they kept just driving into the lane and forcing the issue more and more and more. But Wiggins, once again, to go back to him forcing Tatum into shot selections that weren't ideal numerous times, and was what saved the Warriors in quite a few different situations, him and Brown. You know, they got them each to put up bad shots where then it's an easy rebound for the Warriors, or an off-ball block from Wiggins. He had a couple of those last night. There was a vicious one on Brown, and the ball, I believe, went straight up into the air, and Steph got that rebound or got that deflection, and then they immediately started on the fast break. But Draymond was excellent on defense. Gary Payton comes back in and has another really strong game where he knows when to shoot and when to try and find another open man. But his defense was good again. And I'd be interested to see if Kerr rolls out the Otto Porter to start again to get Looney, because they're trying to stagger a little bit the Looney and Draymond minutes. I mean, by the numbers, technically, the Warriors are the most effective when Looney is out there, but you don't want to get him into foul trouble, which has happened in this series. And you also want to be able to play him, especially late in game, if you need that extra size for defense or rebounding. So you need to be somewhat protective of him. You know, Porter's a nice little stopgap measure, but you can't get heavy minutes out of him. Although you can get more out of him than you can out of Iguodala at this point. But Kerr is not, in previous rounds, he was willing to dip further into his bench to get down to your Kamingas and your Moody's. But Bielitsa, I think, is as far down into his rotation as he's willing to go. And Udoka has an even shorter, you know, bench. It's Derek White, and that's about it. You'll get spot minutes from Grant Williams at this point. You'll get spot minutes from Peyton Pritchard. But that's about it. You know, you're not going to get a ton of minutes from the very end of even the middle. I mean, Tice is not going to get out there all that much. And if you take away like late game situations where you're clearing out the benches, Neesmith isn't going to get much of a run, although he's going to get more than Stauskas or any of the guys at the very, very end of the bench. But Udoka just has, it's a thin line of individuals that he is willing to play out there right now. And Kerr can at least mix it up. If the Warriors really want to make this, like close it out, if they can get foul trouble on anybody on the Celtics and get the Celtics deeper into their bench, it's more than likely going to spell early doom for them. But yeah, watching it, it's just so intriguing that Boston basically stuck with the defense on Curry, made some slight adjustments of the, we're just going to stick a guy on him for certain possessions, you know, a Smart or a Brown, and basically don't worry about what the rest of the offense is going to do and just make sure Curry is not part of this play. When he is having an off night, like, it had they taken this strategy in game four, perhaps they affected Curry a little bit more, and the it's enough for them to pull out a win in game four. And then in game five, they exhibit the strategy more than they did in game four when Curry's having an off night, and just drop more on those pick and rolls, let them have it, and just close off the lane so they don't give up the points of the paint or the guys rolling on those pick and rolls. We might have two different outcomes here. But so first time this playoffs, the Celtics have lost two straight. Do we really think they're going to lose three straight to close out this in game six? Now, Boston's not the best at home this postseason. And if there's any team that's played exceptionally well with their back to the wall, it's the Boston Celtics. They've had numerous closeout games so far, and they've managed to pull it out against Milwaukee and Miami. They had a game six and seven with Milwaukee, then they have game seven with Miami, and they take all three. So now they have games six and hypothetically seven for the Warriors. And will the Celtics be able to even this series tomorrow night? They are playing at home, and that fan base is going to be rabid, flat out rabid. If the Warriors were unhappy with the interaction with the fans and their overall general decorum in the previous games in Boston, I can only imagine what this one is going to look like. The weird thing is, man, when they show shots of the crowd in Boston, there's so many people with like the big, huge, you know, cheap Mardi Gras chains and the massive medallions akin to Flava Flav's clock from Public Enemy in the late 80s, early 90s. But that like size medallion, it's like the basketball version of the Raiders fans. It's so strange to watch. Like, I think of them as a solid fan base, but not of these court jesters dressing up in the weirdest, you know, titty beads you're ever going to see. I don't know where this trend came from and why Boston of all places. Like, Miami or New Orleans or something, like, it's in the region, New Orleans especially, it totally would make sense if they have the Mardi Gras titty beads. But for Boston, is it just a vendor outside is selling them, and then a couple people started wearing them, they got on TV, and other people were like, oh, I like that. And then it just became a trend, and now there's 50 people outside selling those things. I don't know. But the choice, it's very distinct. But I originally, coming into this series, I chose Warriors in six. I obviously am not going to deviate from that because that's what I chose. But who knows? I mean, you can't count Boston out. They've just proven. It'd be one thing if they coasted through the East and weren't really pushed to the limit, much like you could say the Warriors weren't pushed to the limit, nowhere near what Boston has gone through. But Boston is just, Milwaukee had a chance to close them out, and Boston did not go quietly into that night. And Miami had that same chance as well, and Boston ultimately beat them. So now we get into the same situation. The only, you know, the difference to me, though, is they've played a boatload of minutes, and their top two guys on Boston have just got to be flat out gassed. Now, at the very least, because we go for this 1-1-1 on games 5, 6, and 7 to close out, you get one extra day's rest for the travel, and they get to sleep in their own beds for, you know, last night and tonight. And they get to, you know, the general routine of their regular life. And perhaps that extra little bit of rest will give Robert Williams' knee just a tiny bit more time to recuperate. So perhaps he can give you an extra 3-4 minutes out there, as opposed to, pulling himself early in certain games, or his coach having to pull him early. But if Boston just limits their turnovers, it's proven out that they're going to win the game. So there we go. Boston limits turnovers, wins the points in the paint battle. They're going to win it, but I'm going to jump into, the chat. Oh, Tamor Khan said, I'm so glad I got to see Wiggs' poster in person. Yeah, that was an awesome dunk. Great seats, by the way, Tamor. I believe that was you that tweeted me the video from pregame. I was more impressed with Wiggins' Jordan-esque switch hands to go to the left layup as he coasted through two defenders. That to me was the more impressive athletic play, but that dunk would have been electric in person, and you just feed off the crowd around you and everybody's just going bananas. So Tamor says the start of the third where Boston kept getting whistles made it seem like the fix was in, completely wiped the lead. Well, that and all the threes. So Jeremy Bauer says Wiggins has done everything besides scoring. His defense has been great and he is killing it on the boards. Yeah, the boards thing I didn't even mention yet. So thank you for that. Game four, he sets a career high for rebounds at 16. And then he turns around and has, I believe it was 13 boards last night, like another excellent rebounding game. And the Warriors, even though Boston has the size advantage and the length advantage, the Warriors are winning the rebounding battle. That's another factor out there. But turnovers, I think, would be the bigger key. So Tamor Khan says the Warriors' conditioning is levels above other teams because of all the off-ball action. Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, they're constantly running, which you would hope that other players like Curry would look at that and be like, well, there's a way I can be effective. James Harden, Russell Westbrook, the numerous other point guards and wing players that just stand there and watch as other teammates are doing all the running around. It's an easy way to be effective. Just keep the defense honest. So Daniel Savoy says, hello, hello. There are signs in Boston with Aisha can't cook on them. Yeah. Did you see that Curry showed up to this post-game presser with a t-shirt that says Aisha Curry can cook? And he had a jacket on over top of it, but it was like a zip-up jacket. And he had that thing unzipped and perfectly framed. So you could see that, you know, as soon as he comes in to sit down, it is prominently displayed. So Curry saw that and was more than happy to have that, I guess, interaction with the general fan base at large. So JMB says, how dare you impugn us Raiders fans, Matt? How dare you? There's nothing wrong with being a weirdo. Not at all. It's one of those things of, it's an interesting hook that the Raiders have, and it seemed to be built up over, you know, time. When I was a kid, like, they had a rabid fan base with a little bit of those aspects. And then over time, like the road warrior type vibe is grown steadily. And then the guys with the shoulder pads, with the spikes and the face paint and all that, as it's built up over time. And now it's just one of those things of, it's the Raiders fan base and it's unique to them. So I enjoy it for the Raiders. It's just for the Celtics, I don't know. It's anachronistic. Why are titty beads the answer or the fashion accessory choice du jour for Boston of all cities? I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. So Jeremy Bauer says he thought it was 15 boards. Are you saying from last night's game, or not last night, the last game, or from the career high game? Because I'm trying to pulling up both now. I thought it was 16 boards. What did he have last night? Yeah, he had 13 boards overall and then 16 boards. So he had 13 boards last game, 16 career high in game four. Game five was 13 boards, according to NBA.com. But there we go. I think that's it. That was a breakdown of last game and a slight look forward to game six. I hope everybody else out there enjoys it. Tamor, you know, if there's a game seven, enjoy the game seven. I'm sure you're hoping that there is no game seven, but I don't know if you would have tickets to that or not. But congrats. I've never seen a finals game. Should have gone last year. Didn't even think about it. And then I saw my brother-in-law went, and then he told me what he paid for tickets, and they were cheap for what he got. He was in lower bowl. It's like, I would have easily paid that money, because you think it's going to be like Super Bowl prices. And depending on the city, now Golden State, I'm sure it was nice and pricey. Boston, nice and pricey, but apparently Phoenix, not so bad. But anyway, I hope everybody enjoys tomorrow's game six. And depending on my schedule, so if they close out, the Warriors close out tomorrow night, then I'll probably do a wrap-up show on Friday instead of waiting a full week until Wednesday. Otherwise, if we go into, you know, game seven, then I'll just hold off and go till, well, actually, so what, game seven would be on Sunday, I believe. Let me pull it up. Yeah. So then if it's game seven on Sunday, then I will do a Monday wrap up. So depending on whatever this series wraps up, I will do a drop in dimes the next day to talk about the series, the playoffs. And, you know, if you guys are interested, I can bring you on to the show. Come in. You can let me know your favorite parts of the finals, the playoffs as a whole. I'd love to hear from all of you. It's great to see you in the chat, though, for everybody that joined. But if you want to jump in and hang out for 5 minutes, say hi to everybody, give your 2 cents on the playoffs as a whole, awesome. And if nobody wants to do that and they just want to join in the chat and watch along, because I know some people are watching at work and stuff like that, or I think some have mentioned in the past they turn it on while they're driving around. Probably not the best idea, but thanks for watching. But yeah, love to chat with you. So look for the next drop in dimes either Friday or Monday, depending on when this series closes out. And until then, thank you so much to everybody that joined and for that support the show. Means the world to me. And you have my eternal thanks. You can follow me anywhere at Matt Nost. That is it for today's drop in dimes. I'll see you guys in the very near future with another one. Until then, stay safe out there. Enjoy game six and possibly game seven. I'll talk to you guys real soon. Adios.